With infinite complacence, people went to and fro over the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small, spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design, man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space.
Why don't you ask me what it feels like to be a freak?
The power of a new generation.
Everyone here is mad.
Greetings, and you are listening to Savage Science Radio here at Jackalope 105 FM, and I am your host, Tracy Savage. Let's start tonight off with a little monstrous music.
The secret side of me, I never let you see. I keep it caged, but I can't control it. So stay away from me, the beast is ugly. I feel the rage and I just can't hold it. It's scratching on the walls, in the closet, in the halls. It comes awake and I can't control it. Hiding under the bed, in my body, in my head. Why won't somebody come and save me from this? Make it in.
Just a movie. It's actually reality. The stuff that we think is in a comic book is actually becoming, the real thing in laboratories. One such situation is where scientists have made super soldier ants. Now listen to this. The finding could help to solve a mystery of the origin of such ants and other ancestral throwbacks such as human tails. Now, when eight bizarrely big-headed soldier ants turned up in a wild colony collected from Long Island, New York, scientists knew they had found something interesting. No, it was not a precursor to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. This discovery of these oversized versions of soldier ants, whose job is to defend the nest, led researchers to create their own super soldier ants in the lab with the help of a hormone and, by doing so, offer an explanation for how ants and possibly other social insects take on specific forms with dedicated jobs within their colonies. Now it turns out that these abnormal soldier ants were throwbacks to an ancestral state, one that no longer shows up within their species except apparently by accident. This phenomenon occasionally pops up elsewhere in the form of whales, say, bearing limbs their ancestors lost, chickens with teeth, or humans with tails. Reminds me of a particular Bruce Campbell episode on The X-Files. Anyway, quote, it's been known for a long time that these kinds of slips occur, and they are viewed as the Barnum and Bailey of evolution, unquote, said the study's senior researcher, Ehad Abouhaif, Canada Research Chair in Evolutionary Developmental Biology at McGill University. And he also goes on to say, what we are showing for the first time is there is this ancestral potential sitting there, and when poked by the environment, it can really unleash this potential that can power evolution. The species were collected in New York by Dolly Morisi. Normally has two types of worker ants, according to Abouhaif. The minor workers, which are responsible for foraging, nursing, feeding eggs and larvae, and taking care of the queen, don't forget that, very important, and the soldier ants, which defend the nest and use their big mandibles to crack seeds harvested by minor workers. Now, this species doesn't have super soldiers, but the big-headed critters resemble the super soldier ants occurring among 8 species of ants found in the American Southwest and northern Mexico. All 9 species belong to the genus Phidoli, which contains about 1,100 species. So it made sense that the out-of-place super soldiers could reveal something about the origin of super soldiers among the 8 other species. Now, making this super soldier to find out, the researchers, led by Rajendran Rajakumar, I believe I said that correctly, a doctoral student in Abouhaif's lab, watched the development of super soldier larvae from 2 of the 8 species that normally produce them. Now, these researchers wanted to study the behavior of the P. morrisi that they had collected, but they were killed in the lab by the other ants. Nature took its course there. An ant's caste or role in the colony is determined by environmental switches or periods during its larval development when it's receptive to certain environmental cues. Now, adult ants in the colony can manipulate these switches by, for instance, applying certain hormones called pheromones to the larva. In the first period of development, this switch determines whether the egg will become a queen or a worker, and then another switch determines whether the larva will become a soldier or a minor worker. Just before the second switch, they applied a chemical that acts like juvenile hormone to the larva of 3 species that do not produce super soldiers. Juvenile hormone is involved in translating environmental cues, such as nutrition, into the identity of the larva. By applying it artificially, the researchers not only pushed the larva past the threshold at which they would normally become regular soldiers, but past a second threshold, one that is normally hidden, creating super soldiers. But these lab-created super soldiers weren't perfect matches to the natural ones. Of course, there was a bit of a problem. As adults, they retained their vestigial wings buds, something normal super soldiers lose when they mature. Doesn't it seem like whenever they tamper with nature, something extra always gets pronounced? I don't want to go there. Anyway, quote, the potential to be super soldiers is there, but it's a little raw, unquote, Abouhaif said. The researchers also looked at the expression of a gene involved in the control of wing development and found similarity between the lab-induced super soldiers and the natural ones. They also found similar changes occurred in two different species of naturally occurring super soldiers. This indicated both relied on the same developmental mechanism. So why have super soldiers? Well, the naturally occurring super soldiers appear to have a defense function. These species live in the same areas as army ants, which attack their colonies. You know, army ants. And during a raid, the super soldiers use their large heads to block the tunnels to the nests to keep the attackers out. Now, there are other species of Fidoli ants, those without super soldiers, who also live alongside army ants. One of the species in which the researchers induced the super soldiers, P. hyati, grabs its brood and climbs up stalks of grass to escape army ant raids. Moreau suggests another reason the giant heads of super soldiers might come in handy, which is grinding seeds. Super soldiers could grind larger seeds better than the regular soldiers, she said. Now, these findings could help to solve a mystery of the origin of such super soldier ants. Past work by Corey Moreau, which we just talked about, an evolutionary biologist at the Field Museum in Chicago, who, by the way, was not involved with this particular study, but in other studies, revealed that one of the super soldier species is located near the base of the Fidoli family tree, closely related to the ancestral ant, while the other super soldier species were scattered throughout the tree. Now, there are two possible explanations for this arrangement. Either each of the species evolved different ways of creating super soldiers, or the mechanism evolved with the earliest common ancestor about 35 to 60 million years ago, according to Moreau. Now, the work of Abouhaif's team points to the latter of those two, that super soldiers date back to the root of the family tree, and it reveals how super soldiers are created. The implications extend beyond ants, according to Moreau, and the question becomes, do all insects use a similar pathway as was found in the big-headed ants, or is this something special to this group? She wrote in an email to Live Science, as a matter of fact. And regardless, it suggests that we should look for evolutionary conserved pathways across the tree of life.
We'll be right back.
So what are the implications of discovering these genes and manipulating the mechanisms and environmental cues that develop changes in a species? Of course, that would lead us to wondering if we could do the same thing in humans. Well, you wouldn't be the first person to think of that idea. And in tonight's special presentation, Escapes the Adaptive Ultimate, it does just that. It was taken from the short story of the same name by science fiction author Stanley G. Weinbaum, and the story was first published in the November 1935 issue of Amazing. The author was credited under the name of John Jessel, which is, you know, he was concurrently publishing stories at the same, well, same time, which is totally redundant. Anyway, moving on. Escape changed a few things about the story, but it was essentially presented as it was written. The Adaptive Ultimate was also dramatized on the television program Studio One under the name Kyra Zelis. In 1957, if you're not familiar with those, you may have seen the film titled She-Devil, where she really got out of control in that movie. Was a pretty good science fiction movie, and a little cautionary tale going on there. As the episode opens, in this story, Dr. Scott is attempting to convince Dr. Bach that he has a theory about human adaptability that he can prove. He has a serum, of course it's been taken from an animal, which is, I believe, a fruit fly, and that he's tested on insects and animals, but now he wants to try it where? On a human being, of course, and to do that, he needs help. And Dr. Bach reluctantly agrees that if he comes across a hopeless case who consents to the experimental treatment, he will allow it. But it isn't long before Dr. Scott gets his chance. Dr. Bach calls him in to help a young woman named Kyra Zelis, who is dying of tuberculosis. They administer the serum, and soon she gets well. Not only does Kyra recover, but she begins to adapt to her new life very rapidly. And the question is, does she lose her humanity as she gains her new powers? Well, let's find out in Escapes the Adaptive Ultimate.
Tired of the everyday routine? Ever dream of a life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all?
We offer you Escape. Escape, transcribed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
You are standing outside a room, horror gripping you, while before your eyes, seen through the transom window, the most beautiful girl in the world is about to die because of you.
Today we escape from reality with a fascinating story of a girl who lived a weird second life, as John Jessel told it in his gripping story, The Adaptive Ultimate.
No, Daniel, I can't do it. You have a very interesting theory,
but... It's more than a theory, Dr. Bach. I've proved it. It works. I tried my serum on tubercular guinea pigs, and it cured them. They adapted themselves to the tubercular bacillus and live. I tried my serum on a dog with rabies. He adapted himself, too. I tried it on a cat with a broken spine. The cat instantly adapted itself to its injury so that the spine had time to knit and heal. Don't you see what a tremendous discovery this is?
Yes, perhaps.
Well, think what that would mean in accident cases. There'd be no further need for emergency surgery. Don't you see that? No matter what the condition, the injury to the body, a mere injection of my serum would permit the patient instantly to adapt himself to his condition and live.
No matter what his injury.
Exactly.
A serum made from insects.
From a common fruit fly, the most adaptable of living organisms. Tear off a wing and it grows a new one. Tear off its head even. Stick on a new head and that too will adhere in time. Think of imparting that same adaptability to human beings.
To grow new heads, it has merit.
Oh, now, please, Dr. Bach.
All right. No, seriously. I know this may be a great thing, but to permit you to experiment on a human being, no.
The most hopeless case you can find, Dr. Bach. Someone already doomed.
Well, if someday I discover in the hospital a hopeless case, understand it will be hopeless.
I understand.
And if the patient shall consent, then you will have your human guinea pig. Well, Dr. Scott, you requisitioned for yourself a hopeless case. Permit me. Mm-hmm. Here is your guinea pig.
What is it, Dr. Bach? TB?
Yeah, final stage. A matter of hours at most. Mm-hmm. She might have been attractive once, but now, hair like string, skinny like a skeleton, and flesh like wax.
Dr. Bach, you call this a fair test? I said hopeless, but I didn't say a corpse.
The lady is returning to life, such as it is. Well, Dr. Scott, I regret I have not a more palatable subject for your experiment, but this is what I promised, a hopeless case.
It's all right, I'll try it. Oh, what's her name?
Let me see, it's on the chart here. Zelas.
What was that?
Her name is Kira Zelas.
Oh.
Young lady. Permit me, I am Dr. Hermann Bach, chief of the staff, and I would like to introduce one of our promising young doctors.
He wants a date, I suppose.
Miss Zelas.
Hello, brown eyes.
What?
Your eyes are brown, aren't they?
Miss Zelas, you see, I've perfected a serum.
I like brown eyes.
This serum might help you, but it has never been tried on a human being before. Well, I thought if you have no objection...
What are the odds?
Odds? Well, actually, you've everything to gain.
And nothing to lose.
Well?
How right you are. Okay. I'm all yours, brown eyes. Go ahead. Experiment away.
Dr. Bach, prepare her arm.
Hours and she is yet alive. I would have said yesterday it would be impossible she should survive the night. So it is now 48 hours and she actually seems better. But miracles such as this have happened before and without serums. A week and she still lives. Each day she becomes better. It is miraculous. The spots on her lungs are disappearing. Her coughing is stopped. There is no sign of bacillus in the culture. But even more amazing, a reaction to abrasions, skin punctures. Yesterday I took a blood specimen. Before I had 1 cc, the puncture in her skin had closed. Yes, in 30 seconds. The ordinary person, it takes a day, 2 days for it to heal. With Miss Kira Zelas, 30 seconds. It is amazing. Then I will not dispute it. Your serum has worked a miracle. She is cured. And now I must just discharge her from the hospital.
Well, Dr. Bach,
you had forgotten that time must come sometime, But you see, I must. She is cured, and we need the room.
Well, yes. Yes, I know, but... Well, she should be under observation. We don't know what effects will show up.
I think, Daniel, you have an extraordinary interest in Miss Zelas. So, I have asked her to come here. She is outside. Shall we invite her in?
Why, yes, of course.
Send in Miss Zelas, please. Now, observe well your miracle. Miss Zelas, come in, sit down.
Thanks. Oh, hello, brown eyes.
Hello, Kira.
I have sent for you, Miss Zelas, because I have good news. Today I am discharging you from the hospital.
Oh?
Yeah? Today you are free to go. That pleases you?
Madly.
Kira, you have people, perhaps? A family?
Aren't we all brothers and sisters under the skin?
Miss Zelas, I will come to the point. I wish to make you a proposition. I mean purely a scientific...
Yes, I know. An experiment.
Precisely. We are interested, Dr. Scott and I, to observe the... further effects of the serum he gave you.
Yes.
I will pay you board and room and $30 a week. You will live at my house. I have a housekeeper, Mrs. Getz. She will look after you. Is that satisfactory?
Wouldn't I be a fool to say no?
Excellent, excellent.
Does Brown Eyes live there, too?
No, but Dr. Scott will continue to have a clinical interest in the experiment. Mrs. Ehlers, have no fear.
Good.
Yes. Well, it is now almost time for dinner. I will take you, Miss Zelas. You will join us, Dr. Scott?
Why, yes, fine, Dr. Bach.
Very well. We shall meet outside in, what, 10 minutes?
That'll do me nicely.
Miss Zelas, you wish to wait here or maybe outside? A little fresh air?
I think I could use a little air.
Good. There is a little park across the street. You will find benches there to rest. We will meet at the front entrance in 10 minutes.
Dr. Bach, what is it? What's the matter?
Some sort of commotion across the street in the park. Oh. Where is Kira?
Well, I thought she'd be here with you.
Perhaps she is still over there in the park.
What do you suppose? Come on! Dr. Bach, it is Kira. Kira, let me through, please. Kira, let us through, please. Officer, what's happened? What is this? Why are you holding this lady?
You know this woman?
Yes, of course. What is it? What's the matter here?
Lenny, your lady friend here merely walks up to an old gent about 60 or so, picks up a nice hefty rock and beats his brains out.
Officer, there must be some awful mistake.
Yeah, her mistake. Cold-blooded murder. Come on, sister, there's the wagon.
But, officer, listen...
You'd better come along, too, mister. Mona Lisa here don't seem to be much in the mood for talking. We'll need someone to tell the desk sergeant her name.
This is terrible, seeing you here like this. I've got to get you out of here. I've got to help you.
She's not so bad when you're here.
Well, listen, this is all a terrible mistake. If you'll tell me what...
Mistake?
Well, yes, of course. You... Kira, you didn't kill that man.
If I said yes, what would you do?
Why, I'd tell him you weren't responsible. I'd tell him about the serum. I'd tell him it was my fault that somehow the serum I gave you caused your mind to snap something. That would be the only explanation.
You'd do this? Ruin your career, no doubt? Just to save me?
Well, yes, of course I would.
And what would they do to me?
I don't know exactly. Put you away, under observation, something. Kira,
then my answer's no. I did not kill the man. Oh, don't worry. I won't be convicted. I'll take care of myself very well. I'll, as you say, adapt myself to the situation.
All right now, Mr. Salvatore, continue. Tell the court in your own words precisely what happened.
This old man, you see, is buying circus peanuts from me every day. For months, every day. And this one day, he pull out his pocketbook, his billfold, and I'm look, it's stuffed with the bills. The big money. He says, Salvatore, can I make a change for $20? And I'm laugh. I'm say, mister, I'm a peanut man. You take the peanuts and you pay me tomorrow. He said, thank you very much. He turn around, and then here's this dame, she pick up was a great big stone and a conks him. It's a murder.
I object, Your Honor.
Objection sustained.
Continue, Mr. Salvatore.
Oh, she nothing more to say. This dame, she bend over and she reach in his pocket to take the money. I'm a grabber, people come, police come and
Mr.
grab...
Mr. Salvatore, can you describe this young lady to us?
Oh, see, I remember her very well. She's skinny. She's ain't no beauty, you know. You got the black suit, the brown hair, eyes, don't know, dark, you know, maybe brown or blue.
Thank you, Mr. Salvatore. Your witness.
Mr. Salvatore, you say that the young lady, the assailant, had brown hair and dark eyes?
Si. Brown hair, dark blue eyes.
And do you see the young lady in the courtroom?
Oh, si. She's sit right to...
What's the matter, Mr. Salvatore? Huh? Are you pointing at Mrs. Ehlers?
See?
May I ask the defendant to rise, please? Mrs. Ehlers, will you kindly remove your hat, please?
Dr. Bach, look. Her hair, it's become the color of aluminum.
Your Honor, I submit that this defendant does not possess dark hair, nor, if you will observe, dark eyes. I am prepared, therefore, to submit a lock of her hair to be tested by any chemist the court may appoint. to prove that the pigmentation is entirely natural.
I don't believe that it is.
Now, Mr. Salvatore, do you still say that this is the young lady you saw in the park?
I think she's...
Is she?
Mamma mia, she... No!
Good Lord, Dr. Bach, that hair of hers... Did you see it? It was the color of aluminum. She was beautiful.
Yeah, beautiful. And so she has been acquitted. They call her innocent. Daniel, I am a convert to your great principle of adaptability. But where will it end? You start with an ideal, and you wake up to discover you have created a monster.
But she was acquitted. It was all a mistake.
You really believe that?
Dr. Bach.
Yes, Mrs. Griss?
She is healed, Doctor.
She?
That woman in the newspaper.
Ah. Kira is here?
You said she was so poor, such a church mouse. Ah, you should see her.
What do you mean, Mrs. Griss?
So fine, so great a lady.
I'll go and talk to her, Dr. Bach.
Hello, Brown Eyes.
Hello, Kira.
Aren't you glad to see me?
Oh, yes. Yes, of course. Oh, congratulations on your acquittal today. We were there.
I know. I sensed it. I was hurt that you didn't come up and congratulate me.
Well, there were photographers and what... Why, Kira, your hair, it's black again.
Isn't it always? Don't you like it?
Oh, yes. Yes, of course. It's beautiful.
Am I beautiful? Brown eyes.
Very, very beautiful.
And are you happy to have me back? I always did like brown eyes.
Kira.
Tell me, how do you like my new clothes? My gown?
Why, it's very nice.
Nice? It's exquisite. I have a whole new wardrobe, hat, shoes.
Well, how, Kira? Where did you get the money?
Money?
You only had $3 when you left the hospital.
Oh, so I did.
Kira. Kira, you did take that wallet from the old man.
Why, naturally.
You did murder him.
Certainly. Oh, calm. Don't look so shocked. Oh, I'm tired, Brown Eyes. You'll excuse me if I appropriate Dr. Bach's room. Good night.
Dr. Bach, we've got to do something.
Yes, Daniel, we do.
I haven't slept a wink all night trying to think of what we can do.
I've been here in the laboratory all night. I think I know.
What?
This serum of yours, it has accomplished a miracle, yeah. It is the adaptive ultimate. Changes that take the ordinary person days or months, she accomplishes instantly. She walks into the sunlight, she is tan. She walks out, she is pale again. When she is in danger, she adapts. She could survive the electric chair, the hangman's noose. She was in danger in the courtroom. She adapted. She changed her whole appearance at will, so she could not be identified.
Yes, I know, I know.
Oh, you must not blame yourself. You could not know what you were creating. Now, this morning, I operated on one of your guinea pigs. I found this. The pineal gland hypertrophied. That is what causes it.
Well, then we could operate and... And maybe change her back.
Yeah, but she can adapt to anything, anesthesia included. How can we operate? Unless we get her consent.
Well, perhaps...
Oh, you are dreaming, Daniel. Do you really think she will consent now? Now that she has power? Perhaps more power than any human being ever possessed before. Power for evil. And she has already killed one man, remember.
But if we watched her, Doctor, kept her under guard...
Again Pygmalion falls in love with his Galatea. No, Daniel, no. She must be destroyed. We must perform surgery at once.
Well, she'll die.
She will go back to what she was, with but a few hours to live. It is best, Daniel.
Yes, I suppose so.
Yes? Yes, Mrs. Goetz?
Danke.
What is it, Dr. Bach?
And so perhaps she is also telepathic. She sensed what we were about to do, and now it is too late.
What do you mean?
Miss Zelas is gone. Disappeared.
Dr. Bach. Did you call for me?
Yeah, Daniel. Have you seen the evening paper yet?
No, not yet.
Then here. After 2 months, there is news of our Miss Kira Zelas.
What? Let me see that. Where? Oh. The surprise of the evening was the appearance of John Kellen, ambassador at large, diplomat extraordinary, the man slated to head the forthcoming World Atomic Energy Control Commission. Mr. Kellen, one of Washington's confirmed bachelors, squired the gorgeous Kira Zelas.
You see? She has become gorgeous, our drab little urchin.
Miss Zelas, the dazzling beauty who affects a dark wig by day and a white one at night.
A great power of adaptability, courtesy of Dr. Daniel Scott. Dark by day, white by night.
Well, what are we going to do, Doctor?
Do?
The World Atomic Energy Control, the one real hope of world peace. Kira isn't interested in peace.
What can we do? Surgery, I know, but politics? We must wait and see. We must wait and see how far your mad woman will go.
Washington is agog with rumors about the romance between glamorous Kira Zelas and John Kellen, the newly appointed head of the World Atomic Energy Control, one of the most powerful political figures on the globe.
John Kellen leaves tomorrow for the crucial atomic energy conferences at Geneva, Switzerland, and sailing on the same boat as the exotic Miss Kira Zelas, with whom his name has been frequently linked. Rumor has it Miss Zelas acts as a sort of unofficial assistant to Mr. Kellen, thus making her one of the most important women in the world.
Glamorous, exotic. Of such fragile stuff is world peace fashioned these days, Daniel.
I wonder what she intends to...
Somebody calling at dinner time?
Oh, sit still, Dr. Buck. I'll see who it is. Yes? Kira!
Hello, Brown Eyes. May I come in?
Why, yes, of course.
Oh-ho! Our exotic guinea pig,
Good evening, Dr. Bach. I'm not intruding.
Of course not.
You're very kind. John and I... You've read about Mr. Kellen?
Oh, yes.
We're leaving for Europe tomorrow for the conferences in Switzerland.
Yes.
He had a series of meetings to attend tonight, so I told him I would stay here.
You're staying here?
I took the liberty of saying you were my uncle, Dr. Bach.
Oh.
John will call for me in the morning on his way to the airport. We're leaving at 8. I do hope I'm not too late for dinner.
Not at all. In fact, we're very happy to have you here, aren't we, Dr. Scott?
Kira.
Hello, Brown Eyes.
What are you doing out here in the garden?
Waiting for you.
You knew I'd follow you?
Of course. Have you missed me?
You know I have. Oh, Kira, listen to me. Do you love this John Kellen?
When I want love, I'll come to you, Brown Eyes.
Well, then why? What is it, money?
Money? I don't need money anymore. What does an empress need with money?
Empress?
That's what you've made me. The most powerful woman the world's ever known. John Kellen. He's supposed to be important. But in my hands, he's clay, to be molded as I wish. Do you see what that means?
Yes, I see. You hold the fate of the world in your hands.
Exactly. To do with as I want. And I shall. Would you like to rule the world with me, Brown Eyes?
Kira, you're evil.
What is good? What's evil? Come here, Brown Eyes. Look at me. And forget such things.
Are you asleep, Dr. Bach?
Sleep? Who can sleep?
Kira's insane, Doctor. Do you know what she's planning to do?
I heard.
Oh. Maybe we could get to this Kellen.
And then what?
Well, if we could talk to him, tell him...
Tell him what? Didn't I talk to you? Would you listen? Where is she?
Oh, she's gone to sleep.
I tell you, there's only one remedy, surgery. It is the only hope.
But she'll never consent to surgery, Dr. Bach, and she's probably immune to anesthesia.
Maybe not all anesthesia.
What?
Downstairs in my laboratory, I have a tank of ethyl chloride.
You mean operate here, tonight?
Yeah, tonight, right here, where she sleeps. Now stop staring down at her. Pour the anesthesia onto the cone. Hurry.
That ought to be enough to anesthetize an elephant.
onto the face quickly.
All right.
Then tightly hold it.
I'm trying. She's forcing my hands. I can't hold her. She's too strong.
Fools. Did you think you could make me unconscious? You were going to operate on me. Is that what you were planning? How are you going to slit my throat with that scalpel? Look.
Kira, don't!
There. You see? I plunge your knife into my heart. I withdraw it. And the wound is healed. Now, go away, both of you. I want to sleep. John will be calling for me at 8.
In the morning. 2.5 hours more and she will leave. And the world will be one step nearer chaos. We are scientists, Dan. We have a responsibility to civilization. We must find a way to destroy this...
Carbon dioxide. Creature.
Carbon dioxide,
it's a fundamental biological law. No human can survive in its own waste product. Carbon dioxide is a human waste. Dr. Bach, if we could fill the room where she's sleeping with carbon dioxide, she'd become unconscious. You could operate, then. Who are you calling?
The hospital. I will have them send over 2 tanks of carbon dioxide.
You think it should work, then?
We must try anything. Hello, this is Dr. Bach. Let me talk to surgery. Now hurry, it is an emergency. Is ready. You sealed the crack under the door?
Yes.
You closed the window?
Yes.
All right. Let us start the gas. Well, then, through the transom above the bedroom door, you will be able to observe her reactions. You placed the lighted candle inside the room?
Yes, Doctor. I left the candle on the table.
Observe it carefully.
All right.
When it goes out, your Miss Kira Zelas should be unconscious. Dan, can you see inside the room from up there?
Yes, Doctor. Candle is flickering, Doctor. Wait. No, it's still flickering. It's just gone out, Doctor.
Excellent. It means there is now a concentration of 8 or 10% carbon dioxide. The average person would long since be dead.
Doctor.
Yeah, Dan, what?
Just a minute.
Yes, yes?
She's breathing much more quickly now, convulsively.
Chain stroke breathing?
She's opening her eyes now.
What?
She's getting up.
Getting up?
She's staggering. Holding her throat, Doctor. She's gasping. She's
yes?
Moving toward the door. She's trying to unlock the...
So.
She's seen me. She's trying to...
Well, what is it?
She's collapsed. It's over.
Yes?
How do you do, Dr. Bach? I'm John Callan.
John, yes, of course. Come in.
I haven't taken you away from anything.
Oh, no. We were performing some surgery, my associate and I. I have a miniature surgery here for emergencies, and we have just finished.
Is that the patient on the table?
Yes.
Is she...
Yes, she is dead.
Too bad. Silly-looking creature, wasn't she?
She was a charity case.
Well, I won't keep you. Is Kira here?
No, she changed her plans. She said there were some things she wished to do and she would meet you at the airport.
Well, that's a woman's prerogative, isn't it, changing plans?
Yes.
I'd better get a move on, then. Nice to see you, Doctor. I hope we'll meet again when I return from Europe.
Yes, that will be nice, Mr. Callan, and good luck on your mission.
Thank you, sir. Goodbye.
Yeah, goodbye. Well, Daniel, maybe we will get some sleep now. Dan.
Huh? Oh, I'm sorry, Doctor. I was daydreaming. She's lovely, isn't she?
Lovely. Yeah, then lovely. May she always be in your memory.
Escape is produced and directed by Norman MacDonald. Today we have presented transcribed The Adaptive Ultimate by John Jessel, adapted for radio by Chet Spurgeon and Herb Futran, with editorial supervision by John Dunkel, starring Edgar Berrier as Dr. Bach and Stacey Harris as Dan Scott. Featured in the cast were Elsie Holmes, Frank Gerstle, Larry Dobkin, Tom Charlesworth, and Ann Morrison. Special music was arranged and played by Ivan Ditmars. Next week...
You are trapped in a dark, empty house. A girl lying dead at your feet. And surrounding you, closing in on you, are the band of killers, deadly enemies of your country and yourself. And they are intent on murdering you.
Next week, we escape with the famous story, Confidential Agent, by Graham Greene. Be sure to tune in at this same time next week, when once again we offer you Escape. This is Roy Rowan speaking for CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Well, that was a cautionary tale. All's well that ends well. At least we figured out how to fix that problem. No species can escape its own waste. Great moral to that story. Mess with Mother Nature? Are you going to? Well, if you think about it, of course we had the fiction story of Frankenstein, and translated into real life, something we accept on a daily basis now is organ transplant, right? Well, this idea of genetic tinkering or manipulating environmental cues to see if an organism will adapt a particular way is being translated to human use in the hotly debated controversy over embryo screening and, of course, the ethics of human genetic engineering. You know, what if you could screen embryos for diseases before they become babies? What if you had the power to choose the traits your baby would have? Would you use it? Well, back in April 2008, Dartmouth College ethics professor Ronald M. Green had a pretty famous essay called Building Baby from the Genes Up, and that was published in the Washington Post. Green presented his case in support of genetic engineering of embryos, arguing that tinkering with genes could eliminate disease or confer desirable features onto our future progeny. Quote, why not improve our genome? Unquote, he asked 2 days later, of course. Richard Hayes, executive director of the Center for Genetics and Society, rebutted, as scientists always do, warning of a neogenetic future and the danger of genetic misuse, quote unquote. Now, these practically polar opposite opinions are two sides of a debate taking place around the world. The controversy revolves around what scientists are calling reprogenetics, which is the combined use of reproductive and genetic technologies to select and someday even genetically modify embryos before implantation, not for health reasons, but for the sake of quote-unquote improvement. Reprogenetics is an offshoot of an established medical procedure called pre-implantation genetic diagnosis, or PGD. It's also known as embryo screening. PGD also allows couples at risk of transmitting a genetic disease to ensure their future children are unaffected by the disease without going through the process of prenatal diagnosis, meaning the testing of fetal tissue for the presence of disease genes. and are being forced to make the difficult decision regarding pregnancy termination, of course, which would follow. Basically, PGD involves extracting a single cell from an 8-cell embryo, which is created via in vitro fertilization, of course, and analyzing the DNA of that single cell for the presence of one or more disease-associated genetic alterations. Then, only those embryos without the disease mutation are implanted in the mother's uterus. Introduced into clinical care in the early 1990s, PGD was first used for determining the sex of embryos to minimize the likelihood of transmitting fatal sex-linked disease genes to offspring. If there was a family history of Duchenne muscular dystrophy, for example, DMD, for example, the parents might choose to undergo embryo screening to identify female versus male embryos and then only have the female embryos implanted. DMD is a recessive X-linked disease that affects mostly males. Of course, weren't familiar with that. Since the 1990s, clinical use of PGD has expanded from embryo sexing to single gene diagnostic testing, such as for Huntington's disease. Today, reproductive clinicians regularly use PGD to diagnose some 170 different conditions, with two or more common being cystic fibrosis and hemoglobin disorders like Cooley's anemia, for example. A third and more controversial use of PGD involves screening for chromosomally abnormal embryos in an effort to improve the relatively low pregnancy rates and decrease the relatively high miscarriage rates associated with in vitro fertilization procedures, which are often due to chromosomal abnormalities, these, you know, miscarriages. Now, while some experts have gone so far as to suggest that this type of PGD should be routine for in vitro fertilization procedures because it increases their success rate, others warn that data have yet to show that PGD actually improves pregnancy rates or decreases miscarriage rates following in vitro fertilization. And, of course, you could look that up. There's several studies regarding that. The latter group argues that the use of PGD for chromosomal screening is still experimental. Of course, most recently and even more controversially, at least two British couples have relied on PGD to screen embryos for the presence of BRCA mutations associated with increased risks of breast cancer. Both couples came from families that suffered several generations of breast cancer, and both couples wanted to eradicate breast cancer from their lineage once and for all. In Britain, all PGD procedures must be approved by a formal regulatory agency, which is called the Human Fertilization and Embryology Authority, or HFEA, and these cases initially stumped the HFEA. Debate among HFEA members centered around the fact that testing positive for the BRCA1 or BRCA2 variant associated with breast cancer means only that an individual is at risk for developing breast cancer. Not all embryos with breast cancer-associated BRCA mutations necessarily develop breast cancer as adults. Moreover, most individuals who develop breast cancer have 40 or 50 years of healthy life before becoming ill. After lengthy deliberation, the HFEA finally approved the couple's requests. Now, Professor Green alluded to the HFEA's decision in his Washington Post article. Quote, to its critics, the HFEA approving this request crossed a bright line separating legitimate medical genetics from the quest for the perfect baby, he remarked. Like it or not, that decision is a sign of things to come, and not necessarily a bad sign. It's not a bad sign, Green argues, because knowing more about our genes may actually increase our freedom by helping us understand the biological obstacles and opportunities we have to work with. Green foresees a day when our scientific understanding of the genetics of obesity, for example, will be so advanced that our technology so sophisticated that eventually, without discarding embryos at will, we could use gene targeting techniques to tweak fetal DNA sequences. No child would have to face a lifetime of dieting or experience the health and cosmetic problems associated with obesity. The same is true for cognitive problems such as dyslexia. geneticists have also already identified some of the mutations that contribute to that disorder. And why should a child struggle with reading difficulties when we could alter the genes responsible for the problem, quote unquote? Many scientists are doubtful that a day like this will ever come, given that most human traits are influenced by multiple genes interacting not just with each other, but with the environment, just like we were talking about with the ants. Just as not all embryos with breast cancer-associated BRCA mutations will necessarily develop breast cancer as adults, embryos with altered genes may not necessarily develop the desired traits. The journey from embryo to adult is extraordinarily complex and impossible to predict. Now, what do you think? Suppose science surprises us and that day does arrive. Green argues, quote, the critics' concerns may be less troublesome than they appear, unquote. He insists that parents will not love their children any less in the quest for perfection, and children will not feel pressured to live up to perfectionist expectations. If they do, the problem is with the parenting, not the genetic manipulation. While Green concedes that certain social effects might be worrisome, such as the production of a genability or a ruling genetic class, he also sees PGD as a tool for reducing the class divide by genetically vaccinating, quote unquote, that's his term, individuals against potential hardships like obesity and dyslexia. Dr. Hayes totally disagrees, arguing that while the technology of PGD has a potential to eliminate many horrible diseases, it could also do some real harm. Quote, if misapplied, these technologies would exacerbate existing inequalities and reinforce existing modes of discrimination. The development and commercial marketing of human genetic modification would likely spark a techno-eugenic rat race. Even parents opposed to manipulating their children's genes would feel compelled to participate in this race lest their offspring be left behind. Will all couples, regardless of their fertility issues, go the arduous route of PGD? How will they decide what to do when the likelihood of the perfect baby is pitted against financial and emotional cost involved? Hayes points to Green's own cited statistic that 80% of Green students indicated in a survey that society should not move in the direction of human genetic engineering, a figure in agreement with public opinion polls on the subject also. Hayes writes that Green would be wise to listen to what medical students, the great majority of Americans, and the international community appear to be saying. We don't want to run the huge risks to the human community. And what do you think these risks are? Well, I'm going to leave you to ponder that on your own. Just remember the movie Gattaca. Anyway, this is the end of Savage Science Radio. I'd like to thank Nick Palico for the beautiful show graphics, Dennis Bond and Hawk Productions for that wonderful intro we use every week. And until next week, keep your powder in your pants dry and happy trails until we meet again.